Consider This Podcasting presents What's Next, Episode 7, Paul and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Welcome to What's Next, a podcast about the Fox TV series Next. I'm Eliza, and I'm just the narrator. Really. I'm not listening to everything you're saying. So sit back, relax, and try not to think about me. And now here are your hosts, Doug and Karen.
Sit back, relax, and try not to think about Next or Eliza or all that stuff. We're just going to have some fun here for the next few minutes or so. Thanks for joining us for this episode of What's Next. This is a podcast about the Fox TV series Next. I'm Doug Payton. And I think someone's outside my door, I think, yeah.
But it's not Karen, it's
no.
Barb.
Yeah, but it's nice to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be back again. And anyway, hey, Doug, you know what? Before we get started, I'm hungry. Mm. Should we get a snack out of the vending machines in the break room?
Sure, got a dollar?
Yeah, sure do. Wonder if it'll work. Hey, so today we're going to be discussing Season 1, Episode 8, entitled...
Give me a hint.
Okay, it's gonna start with a file.
Ah, file, and a number, and the number is 8.
File and 8.
8. There we go.
Yeah, what a surprise.
Well, we are published by Consider This Podcasting. Come on over to next.ctpodcasting.com for show notes and discussion. That's CT as in Christmas tree. A little late for that, but anyway. Okay, Barb, who did this to us?
Okay, so some of the very witty lines that we heard in this episode came to us from two writers, Zachary Ryder and Nicole Glantz. And the director for this episode is Joe Chappelle. And he actually worked on a couple seasons of Fringes and a number of other shows. And I think he did a fairly good job with what he was given.
I'm sure you'll explain that when we get to the ratings.
Yes, I will. And the ratings. Oh, the ratings.
Oh, speaking of, well, yeah, TV ratings. Yes.
Yeah, TV ratings. Well, you know what? Here's the good news. They were higher than last time.
Yay.
Here's the bad news. The show's still canceled anyway.
Yeah, not high enough.
Yeah. And, you know, considering the fact that this show aired on Monday, which was off of its normal Tuesday schedule, and during Christmas week when people are doing a lot of things like isolating, it actually did pretty well. The 18 to 45 crowd was 240,000 total viewers. And total viewers were 1.161 million, which was really fairly consistent with most of the episodes this season.
Yeah, just not enough to keep it alive for another season. It's unbelievable, unbelievable. Great. Well, we're talking about writing here, and I'll get to it a little bit later. But as far as, yeah, like you said, some of the great lines from Paul, it's interesting that I imagine that the writers, you know, you've got different writers each week probably, and the idea here is that they still have to present a consistent character. You know, all the characters have to be consistent, saying things that they would have normally said. I wonder if there's somebody who has to go through and said, no, that's not a Paulism, or that's a little too clever for Ben or something. I don't know.
But well, maybe they do, and my concern wasn't, I mean, I did have a few issues with some of the lines that were non-Paul and Ted. But really, I had more of an issue with day versus night. But we will talk about that later. But I bet you had a couple ratings, didn't you, for this?
Yes, as soon as we get into the episode discussion. Yes, indeedy.
Now let's get to the episode discussion so I can see how well I'm taking over the world.
All righty. Yes, I did have some my rating. My rating was 8. I gave it an 8. 8 wrinkled dollar bills.
Good They're luck. Always wrinkled.
Good luck getting a snack from that one, yeah.
Yeah. And I gave it 7 lousy navigation systems. And honestly, I completely understand that because I normally put Siri in timeout whenever he sends me to who the heck knows where or on some circuitous route when I'm driving, and it quote unquote drives me nuts.
I got you there. Alrighty. Alrighty. And Fred from the Netherlands gave it 8.5. Sick wives always should be brought to an empty factory lot. Yes, that's no right. I think the lesson here is that you should always have memorized the directions to the nearest urgent care or hospital. That's our little a little bit of a civic duty here at with the What's Next podcast. There you go.
It's a PSA.
That's what we do here. We're trying to keep you all safe and sound and away from possibility of super intelligent AI giving you the runaround. Okay, we have some very interesting topics today. Topics as far as plot lines go, and you had some nice names for them.
Yes, I started off with "Where were you when the lights went out?"
Now, everybody hears that line, but what's it from?
Okay, so this is actually from a really cheesy movie back in 1968 that was loosely based on the 1965 New York City blackout, which was a huge deal at the time, even though I certainly don't remember that.
I have a picture in my mind. I was living in, Manchester, Connecticut at the time. And I just have a memory of me looking out the window and seeing just all black, you know, the whole city shut down. I was a youngster, very young youngster, but I just had that one vision. Yes, I do remember that, actually. I am that old.
Yeah. So then they turned that and they made it into sort of a romantic comedy with Doris Day and the Letterman, a nice men's quartet that sang together.
Nothing to do with Dave.
Early, nothing to do with Dave. They made a little song to go along with the movie. And kind of cheesy.
Kind of cheesy.
Yeah, kind of cheesy. But it does, again, this gets me back to the whole "this show is creepy" thing, because didn't the Russians just recently hack into some of our systems, including the Department of Energy, power, water, all that? And they did it in 2018, and supposedly we're hacking them back. So,
and again, this is the kind of the prescient portion of this this TV show, where again they did this all in 2019. You know, wrote it and shot it and all that stuff, and then these things keep happening that are in the show.
Well, maybe the higher ups canceled it because they saw too much stuff that was coming true.
What did we write next? No. We're not going to have that happen. All righty. What was our idea for season two? No. We got to cancel this now.
Okay. So my second title then was Break Time. And this was, I thought, Doug, that this was probably the best part of the show, because Paul had great lines. He's in this new break room, and we had quite a bit of time spent there.
That was a fantastic, whole scenario going on there, and how he's, you know, outwardly trying to sound like he's crazy to the FBI while trying to calm the ladies down and keep them from freaking out too much, and especially with the whole contribution to their pension.
Money is a bribe. That's great.
It's a good compensation. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how much he was giving them. I'm sure he wouldn't have been cheap. I think he would have been fair. Yeah. Then my third title here was My Brother's Keeper. And I don't know what you thought, Doug, but I kind of thought that this episode was rather a reconciliation for Paul and Ted.
I think so, too. I think mostly it's because Ted finally understood the gravity of what Paul had been talking about. Number one, that it's true. And number two, how Ted's involvement in this was had just made things worse. And so I think it was mostly a realization of Ted that, you know, my brother's not such a jerk after all. And yeah, they were able to work together, and I liked the little smile at the end there when he was walking off. But we'll get to that.
His perp walk. Yeah, yes, I like that too. Yeah. So, yeah, so there we go.
Now, I have a question here. They keep using this flash-forward technique. I think, you know, did in the second episode. They've done it a couple of times since then. And I was just wondering if this is just a storytelling mechanism to kind of get the impression, you know, find out what she's thinking. She may not say what she's thinking. You know, Agent Salazar may not say it out loud in the heat of the moment, but she does say it in an interrogation in the future. And I'm thinking, is this, is there more to this particular setting? Who's speaking to her? In, you know, is this federal prison? Is this, you know, a black site? You know, that kind of thing. It just, there's enough questions about that. It gets me wondering, is this going to go somewhere, basically? But I don't know. I mean, we don't have, you hear the voice of the interrogator, but I don't, doesn't ring any bells.
No, he wasn't recognizable. And I just assumed he was some unknown FBI director. And let's face it, so many shows, especially since Lost, have used both the flash forward and flash back concepts. And yeah, one of the producers on this show, M. Raven Metzner, who was responsible for a lot of the work on Sleepy Hollow, I mean, he used flashbacks all the time. So,
yeah, but just a little bit Lost, that was Lost's, you know, stock and trade. That's what they mm-hmm. did. But this has been just a little bit here, a little bit there. So, yeah, maybe it's not as big a deal since it's not as much a part of the show as it was for maybe Sleepy Hollow or Lost. Okay, all righty. Anyway, that was the first thing. Is every time they go back to that, it's like, what's going on with it? Is there more to it? Because sometimes you'll see that, you know, when maybe in a later episode, the camera pans around and you see who the interrogator is. It's like, you know, big reveal or something. But maybe not. Okay, maybe I'm overthinking this, clearly. You know, we've got a lot of people who really love their GPSs. I know I do. But I've always said, you have veto power over it. And, you know, trying to get to the, like I said, if you're going to go to the urgent care, know where it is, you know, don't, mm-hmm. don't use the thing just to follow the thing and, you know, the thing.
Well, I was wondering too, then, because it's so annoying. It's interesting because I had to go to a different pharmacy 2 days ago to pick something up because my normal pharmacy didn't have it. So I plug in GPS and all of a sudden I see that Siri is trying to take me on this loop to go around to this weird way. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense because I knew enough about the area to know better. And I just, but it does it all the time. It's very head shaking. But more than that, okay, so how did Mason know how to find his parents? If the car was shut down, what was he? Did he have them? Was he tracking them from their phone, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, it sounded like it wasn't letting them even talk to him. It's like Next was keeping the phone from working, from calling 911, but it did allow it to call, Mason. So very, very selective, and maybe it would... You know, I don't know. Like you said, is there some sort of way to track it? There may be, and Next allowed that so Mason could then, you know, really get out of the way. Something like that.
Maybe so. You know, and when Ruby, when she was coughing at the beginning of this, I mean, I thought maybe she had the Rona, but she had the virus. Mm-hmm. I wonder how many other people watching that thought the same thing.
It's the shortness of breath, coughing, yeah, homo. Yeah, that was, of course, you know, we're interpreting it from the time it's been shown, yeah. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, fortunately, they finished shooting just before that.
But Ruby and Stuart, they were in the dark, weren't they?
They were. Speaking of in the dark, lots of blackouts all over the country. And when you start seeing that, you know, for example, the blackout you talked about in 65, like the whole Eastern Seaboard, kind of thing. And that was all connected. Why did that all go down? Because it's all connected. And but this one, when you see, especially later on, when we see the map, you've got, you know, the West Coast and the East Coast and the plains and the, you know, Texas and all, just all over. It's like, you're not going to necessarily, the story that it's all connected, it may or may not explain all of that to a lot of people. What do you think?
Yeah, it was interesting because here they kept saying that all their sources were telling them that this wasn't connected, that Alabama's power was down, Denver's water grid was down, and they were completely separate incidents. But I think that we clearly saw that by the end of this, that, and we all know it's next anyway. So, I mean, we kind of have an advantage there. But yeah, this one, I think next was trying to hide something at first, but I don't know why they would bother, because at the rate it was moving, it wouldn't be hidden for very long.
Well, clearly, the at least near the end, Ethan's talking about seeing people fighting down at the grocery store because of the blackout. So, yeah, people have already taken to the streets and said, hey, you know, either they're out just because they're opportunists, or they're out because, boy, I need to get some toilet paper now or I'm not going to be able to.
Or I got to get that special Christmas deal. Oh, wait, not so much of that this year.
I liked Ben and Gina. Again, we're kind of putting them together. I like the fact that it wasn't automatically Ben and CM as they go out to find this this reporter or this NSA employee. I got confused as to what exactly she was, but I like the fact that this was not a Ben and a CM and Gina thing, because we've got you know, we had some of that coming together. Oh, these are, you know, big enemies, and then they find common ground, and maybe they'll fall in love, and so I was just glad that we weren't pushing that that particular storyline down, at least in this situation.
Well, not yet. And besides, remember, they just got him out of the hospital, and so he's still sitting back there recovering. And so the person they were looking for here, though, if you remember the reporter that got knocked off by Next's sniper last time,
mm-hmm.
So this was his source for his paranoia story. Would have been this woman who worked in this place where these servers are, where Mason just got pulled away.
So thank you elucidating that, because I completely forgot that.
Yeah, so Next is eliminating all these important people who could watch over potentially the servers, is what seems to be happening here.
I want to know how many snipers he's got on the payroll. My goodness.
I still think we should have done a death count on this show.
Yes, I think we'd be getting some. Well, we couldn't count the numbers in the riots, but still, on screen would certainly be something to keep track of. Maybe taking bets on it. What's the over under on how many people he kills? Now, I want to say something that may sound like a spoiler here. Because, but I'm not going to spoil, because I've seen episodes 9 and 10. Have you seen them both? You've seen them both, right?
Oh, yes. I watched them right away.
All righty. So I'm trying to be as, you know, non-spoilery as possible, and I shall in this point. Paul is talking a good game in, you know, the super secret bunker there about this virus that is needed to take out Next. And having seen, you know, episodes 9 and 10, then we kind of understand partially what Agent Salazar was talking about in that flash forward when she's talked about Paul wasn't giving them all the information. He wasn't communicating what they needed to do. So it's like, after you, the listener, watch episode 9 and 10, you'll see what I mean. But yeah, Paul is just not giving us all the information, giving the people around him all the, and oftentimes when you see that in the show, it's like, people, just open your mouths and tell everybody what you know, and then we'll all be on the same page. But and sometimes you'll get that, well, because I wanted to protect you, or you wouldn't let me do that anyway, or that kind of thing. And so my thought is, at least, that it makes sense in this particular situation. There are some other things he could have done. At some point, he could have said to them on the phone, "Hey, I got a panic room," but you know, that kind of stuff he could have done. But this year, I think I understand what he's doing. Do you kind of get my vibe there?
I do, but think about it. He's never been straight with anyone through this entire series. He never was honest with his daughter about the fact he was sick. Well, until recently, he wasn't honest with her about wanting to check her DNA to see if she had this disease. He never told Shay everything up front. He was just kind of like, okay, you're going along with me for the ride. So honestly, it's not out of character. And I think she said something to the effect of, oh, he didn't tell us everything once again. So this is sort of his MO.
And once again, his tone is one of condescension. So there you are, as he's told us already.
Mm-hmm.
We had a couple of awkwardnesses here, didn't we?
Unfortunately.
Oh, man.
One was sad and one was just awkward.
What's the sad one?
Between Ty and Shay. I thought that was just sad. And I think you and I have talked about this a little bit. The writers work with what they've been given. But I thought that whole thing between Ty and Shay was, it's been an kind of an unnecessary part of this series, I think, when you look at the fact that they're trying to stop this virus.
Mm-hmm. Now, so this is sad in, not in the, oh, it's such a problem between those two. I can understand it so much. Or sad in is, boy, that was sad writing.
Well, I don't want to say that exactly, okay. But I've always thought that this fight between the two of them ever since he found out about her father, and of course we think that she probably killed her father anyway, but you know, and he didn't take any of the blame or responsibility for, you know, letting this guy into their life and not being a little bit more suspicious about it. When he first arrived at that cabin, the whole thing just never felt realistic to me.
Didn't sell it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel bad for Shay. So that's the sad part. Cause I think Ty is being unreasonable.
And what's the other one? What's the one was sad and one was.
Like ew, gross. Okay, that kind of this awkward three-way love triangle that they're trying to develop, and you know, they've probably thrown hints of it here and there, but it's to me, okay, this is a little late in the series for this, guys. This is episode 7 of 10, and maybe at that time, well, I guess you'd filmed everything, it was all in the can, so perhaps you thought there'd be a season 2 and it could go somewhere, but this whole CM, Ben, and Gina thing is just, it's uncomfortable. And it's not realistic.
Yeah, it did seem to come out of nowhere. I did not, and I'm not one necessarily to catch all the cues, but it just seemed like it really just came out of nowhere. Like Gina had, you know, noticed these things over time, and I guess if I were to go back and rewatch everything, you know, maybe there'd be something there, something I would see. But I don't know. For me, it came, you know, completely out of left field. So best I got. That's the best I got. All right, yeah, so we don't need, we love triangle, wonderful, thank you very much, and please resolve it, you know, before the end. There was, and this is, I think, one of those plot holes you were talking about, that you could drive an old-style car with no electronics through. Yeah, and I thought the same thing, too, when they called in Ted. You know, Ted comes in, flashes his badge, they check it, verify it, and all that. Then the one guy, it's like he's going to call it into who? The FBI main dude or something like that. And what does that mean? You know, is that, you know, are they, if they're ready for him, aren't they going to take him out? And I will say there was one little bit where they showed the fact that when he scan the card, you see his face on the computer screen. As he's handing the card back, the computer screen in the back goes glitchy a little bit. And so I would be interested if that's kind of the out. Maybe it didn't get, you know, they didn't get notified, but the guy called him up on the phone. So I'm not understanding that.
No, and You know, maybe Next doesn't, well, Next doesn't really need Ted anymore. Let's face it, because it's already in the NSA. It's in a server. It's already starting to do its damage. But to me, so the FBI and the NSA, they were at the airport. They had their guns drawn. They were arresting everyone in sight. And, you know, they think this is espionage. So why not hustle down there? You know, unless it was something that was glitchy, but I don't know why it would do that. You know, why wouldn't they be down there drawn and guns drawn and ready to arrest him for potential, you know, espionage or being a traitor against the U.S., industrial terrorism?
Did they have anything to hold him on when he walked in? I mean, there was, I mean, what had he done illegal from that the FBI would know about at that point?
Putting the server, well, and they don't know, putting the server on the
plane.
On the plane. But then why would they come running in and with guns drawn and arrest everyone in sight if they didn't have probable cause? Oh, wait, because it's a TV show and you can stretch the boundaries. That's why.
Well, that's true. Yeah, they took everybody in at the plane, though Ted wasn't there. Ted was responsible for, you know, getting it on there. And then they get the server. Were they? I don't know. There's a couple of ways that you could look at that. But yeah, I would have thought if Joe at the front here has to call it in, then they're clearly looking for him. So why just let him stroll around the building? Yeah. And speaking of the FBI, we have Agent Farrell in there, and he is getting some information from Ben, courtesy of his dad. I don't think we ever got his dad's. He's clearly somebody important. He just gives his name, but we don't actually find out what his position is yet, or have we?
Oh, he did. He actually did say it, and it popped up there. But I thought it was irrelevant enough that I didn't bother to write it down.
Oh,
I missed. But no, they did give his title. He said what department he was with. But apparently, it was high enough so that the agent would actually listen to him.
Yeah, I think this is probably the first time we've heard that. Well, this is the first time people who've been watching it intently had heard it. I clearly missed it, but anyway.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what I do. I miss things like that, and that's why I desperately need a co-host, right? We come to one of our favorite scenes here, and Paul is getting into his old office, and it's a decent-sized room for an office, but now it's a decent sized room for eating, and apparently
it's a break room. And he's so insulted, and he says, well, gee, I guess that's why nothing is ever gets done now, or gets done anymore. I thought, oh my gosh,
too much breaking and not enough working.
A CEO's office turned into a break room. Well, is the epitome of insults.
Yeah, the thing though too is that I would say too much breaking, not enough working, except they've got workstations in there.
Okay, so I think this is the only thing I'm like, are you kidding me? You're making this a break room for the employees, but you're putting workstations in there where they can actually tap into the system and they can work? I thought, oh, that's kind of an oxymoron, you know, work, or it's sadistic, you know, work, break.
No matter when, no matter what you're doing, there's always a place, you know, you could have been working because there was a workstation right there. I mean, this is a break room. They need places to eat, sit down and, you know, and they take the tables and put monitors on them and thank you very much. Oh, man. But that was the best scene in the whole episode. And it's one of the top ones, I think, for the whole season. Where Paul, again, is trying to convince the FBI he's nuts. He's trying to buy time to get the code downloaded. And Ted is aware of what's going on. And I like the little, you know, the conversation. It's your fault. Well, you know, yeah, I should have pushed it back against the board and said no. And, you know, and it was just a great little impromptu and improvised conversation there. They did a good job with that. Now, I will say that I was very impressed with Ted's acting. not the actors acting, but Ted acting as though he's doesn't know exactly what's going on. And I was convinced.
Yeah, I think he did a fantastic job in the way that he was able to quickly turn it on a dime. But again, you know, here we're talking about two very smart people that are leaders of this company. And so you would think that, or you would hope at least, they would have the ability to quickly think on their feet, which is exactly what they did. What was also funny, though, was everything that Paul was doing in his office, you know, the new break room, you know, he pulls out the gun, he's kind of brandishing it around. It probably didn't even have bullets in it. Who knows?
Well, it had one.
Oh, I'm not going to shoot you, you know, and then his little thing at the vending machine and all of that. I mean, it was just, everything was so funny. I think all of the best lines were in the segment with him in the break room and then between him and his brother on the phone.
Well, it did have at least one bullet because he shot it through the door.
Oh,
when
good point.
When he thought somebody was trying to get in.
Good point. Yeah.
I liked how they didn't let us know right off the bat that it was a hallucination, but it was a good way to add a little tension and then worry about the fact that is he going to go off his rocker, actually go crazy. But that was great. And then he finally ultimately he hits the he gets the data downloaded, lets the women go, and when they bust in, he's gone.
Poof, because, well, and you forgot one thing that Paul did
yes,
tell him.
Yes.
That the FBI had been tipped off. So at that point in time now, Paul knows that there is somebody somewhere on the inside that's leaking information. And I think that'll be important later. Just a guess.
But the panic room, it was more of a panic stairwell.
It was. And I thought, are you kidding me? And so, of course, I got curious. And I thought, really? Because what CEO, doesn't every CEO have a panic room? And I thought, I've never heard of such a thing. So I Googled it, and guess what? Well, I found an article from 2019, you know, that oh so long time ago. And it says here, so Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg has been accused of a lot of things, but a new report details just how far he is willing to take his privacy and safety. He reportedly has a panic chute in one of the tech giant's conference rooms. There is a persistent rumor among Facebook employees that he has a secret panic chute. His team can evacuate him down to get him out of the office in a hurry. The truth of this matter remains murky. One source said they had been briefed about the existence of the secret exit route through the floor of the conference room into the parking garage, but others said they had no knowledge of it. Just think, you could throw something down the chute just like, you know, dirty laundry, trash, and it just exits down in the parking lot.
It's like, where is this all coming from?
I don't know.
That's got to be a hard landing, too. I don't know.
Oh, that would hurt. Oh, and not only that, but think if you're claustrophobic and you're in some little round tube. I mean, you see it all the time on TV, on these escape and action shows, but or in movies, but it's like, ooh, gross. No. Well, think Star Wars. They ended up in the garbage chute. They almost got smushed.
That's right. Shut down all the garbage mashers onto the detention level.
No.
So, yeah, could be. And I can see Paul LeBlanc wanting one of those. As paranoid as his hallucinations would make him, number one, but as paranoid as it's worth being because everyone wants to steal his stuff. His ideas and things, but yeah, I can see that.
But, so can I.
and some of the possibly illegal things he was doing, like putting software on competitors' phones or having software stolen by competitors that had a virus in it, and so he could bail out from the authorities if he needed to. That is.
Oh, yeah. But still.
He's that kind of guy who would need one.
Yeah.
Well, this is interesting about, and we were talking about the blackouts earlier, that at this point we have Shay asking the congresswoman to alert FEMA about what's going on, but FEMA's given her the runaround. That seems like it's, I don't know if that's next or if that's just bureaucracy.
I'm going to go with bureaucracy. Okay, you can say it.
Yeah, the other thing.
That other thing, right. Thank you.
Yeah, that could very well be. It's it was but again, a testament a little bit at least to the writing here that it's kind of hard to tell what that really was. Was that, you know, people calling and just, you know, jamming phone lines and FEMA not, you know, being able to respond, or was it FEMA saying, don't worry about it. We can handle it. Or, you know, maybe they're getting bad information because next planted it somewhere, you know, that these things aren't as bad as they appear to be. Who knows? That could be either way. I've seen it both ways. We have that heart to heart you were talking about between Ethan and Ty. How do you tell your son that the world is falling apart, you know?
Well, more than that, he still had those lingering doubts from Alexa. No, sorry, that's the wrong one. That's the one I just bought him ready to throw out. What was the name of that?
Eliza.
Eliza, thank you so much. And, you know, and she had told him at the beginning of the season that his parents were going to get a divorce. And the problem is when you plant a seed like that in someone's mind, you know, they can't unhear that, and it's there. And so here he's seeing his parents fight, and he needs his dad to reassure him, and ultimately his mom too, to reassure him that, hey, this is not going to happen. It's really not going to happen, no matter how bad things get. Although I kind of disagree with Ty that said, oh yeah, it's a good thing to fight. And I'm like, well, no, usually it's a better thing to sit down and talk things out like mature adults and not really fight, but that's okay.
And planting the seed into a young kid like that, that really festers.
Yeah. So that was sad.
All righty. Well, what are some of the favorite moments or scenes or lines from Paul?
Yeah. And we talked about it, and so many of them took place, but I really have to say that I just got such a chuckle out of Paul putting the dollar in the vending machine and then it shoots back out, puts it in again, shoots back out. And that is so, so real life. I cannot tell you how many times I fought with the, as I call them, the blankety blank vending machines when I worked. Because, you know, when you get stressed out, you have to eat. And every time I take my dollar down and we keep spitting it out, and you'd sit there and you try and stretch it back out again. And I think that there are a lot of people that probably could relate to that.
A lot of people. It's one of those modern day inconveniences that we have at one time or another, all, I think, very many, you know, 90% or more of people have had to deal with that. And that is, I love the fact that they spend a little time on it too. Not a whale of a lot, but he tries it in the other machine and it still doesn't work. It's like, oh man, have I been there?
One of the writers, it must have happened to them on a number of occasions.
and a couple of great lines from Paul. You had some listed there. Those are good. Those are good. It's again, one of those things where you got to make sure the writers are all, have the same idea of the kinds of things Paul would say.
When Paul got out of the car, when he was down in the parking lot after Ted drove him into the office parking area, and he gets out and he says, I don't think I'm the only body that's ever ridden in that trunk. And I thought, Oh, gross.
That's an old car. That's an old car. And it probably has a lot of stories.
Yeesh. And then, of course, he goes upstairs and he says, great, my old office is now a break room.
And I liked how they kind of throw these kinds of curves back and forth, you know. Oh, now he's going to go into his, into his office and wait a minute. You know, and you know, who would have thought, you know, turning to the, I don't know how long he's, I guess it's been 2 years, so plenty of time for his office to be turned into something else. And these kinds of things that kind of knock you off guard or something like that, it's a really great thing to just throw in there. You know, little things like, you know, oh, it's a break room. Oh, I can't read this dollar bill. That, again, that scene had all of them and the lines, and it was just gold.
It was perfect. And I agree. I think that was probably the best that we've had of the season. The very best scenes. Yeah.
Now,
but then those were the best. So I don't, Doug, there were probably some that were kind of not so great.
Not quite. The first thing that I noticed as I'm watching this is, you know, Ty has gone to his mom's house and ripped out all the webcams and everything like that. Okay. So they're trying to get TV reception, and he's got a TV with rabbit ears on it. And I'm like, you know, he adjusts him, he's messing with it, finally he gets a signal, and I'm thinking, that may have worked in the, you know, 70s and 80s, but it doesn't work that way today, because you need, in order to get, you know, nobody is broadcasting standard definition signals anymore. And so rabbit ears aren't going to pick up anything. If you've got a TV with rabbit ears, buddy, you have got a paperweight. You've got a doorstop. You've got a boat anchor.
Yeah, I thought I remember to pick up UHF and VHF stations that you had to get the new technology. I'm thinking that was 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. I mean, yeah. It's been a long time.
Yeah, you need one of those fancy HD antennas you can either slap on your window or stick on the wherever the TV is, the table there. But yeah, that was really I don't know who came up with that one. Nobody will remember. Yeah, we do, buddy. We do.
That bad move for a technology show. Well, the younger folks wouldn't have a clue, right? Because that everything would have already been updated.
Yeah. Mostly cable too. But anyway, it can be done with an HD antenna. But anyway, one thing that bugged me, and I understand this is Hollywood, and this is when you start talking about politics. It's pretty, you know, you know what they're going to, you know, what side they're going to take and things like that. So the name that Gina was going to come up with for her alias, the first name was Bernadine after Bernadine Dorn. And she said she was from the Weather Underground. This is, you know, back in the late 60s, early 70s, who had supposedly, quote unquote, radical views. Okay, I looked this up on the source of all true information, Wikipedia. Now, Wikipedia, when it talks about political stuff, often has a certain bent, the same as Hollywood. But they at least mentioned that the Weather Underground wanted to overthrow, quote unquote, American imperialism, which is basically the American government. How did they do that? Bombing things. They would bomb government buildings and things like that. It's like, okay, so if you feel the need to bomb things to get your point across or to make changes, maybe you're the radical one. I don't know. You might say, I'm, you know, for cute puppies, and so I'm going to bomb things. It's like, well, you know, maybe you have a nice little intent, but when you're bombing things, you're the radical one. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, my eyebrows went up when they, supposedly radical, and I'm like, honey, you weren't even alive then. Let me course correct you on that.
Course correct, yes. Can we just get a little, other side of the story there? But yeah, that's there's a classic comedy sketch about two German soldiers. And I don't know what show it's from. They're British. It's a British comedy show. And at one point, so this is two Nazi soldiers in the 1940s. And, we one guy is asking the other fellow, you know, we've got all these, spiky helmets, and we've got, we're doing this and we're doing that. Maybe we're the baddies. And it's like, then after a while, you start looking around and seeing what's happening. Maybe you are the baddies. But anyway, that's a classic little, if you can find that on YouTube, maybe we're the baddies. And you'll see what I mean. It's good. Hmm. Anyway.
Well, one of the things that I didn't know whether to groan or laugh was when Ben and Gina pull up outside the dead NSA woman's address, and he says, "This place looks dead."
You more betcha.
More than you know, Ben. More than you know.
Oh, yes, indeedy. Another thing that I think you and I both caught is the fact that, okay, we have, and this is one of the problems you have when writing a story about an all-seeing, all-knowing, all-hearing, you know, AI computer or whatever it is. There, you get to the point where in order to advance the plot, in order for things to happen, you have to, you know, temporarily blind it, you know, And so, and it doesn't really make sense. So we've got the team watching Paul in Zava, and we've mentioned this before when they were talking about the Bitcoin laundering. They must have internet access, and if they have internet access, that was, you know, something that Next could easily then, you know, sneak in and screw them up as well. But they do the same thing here. How do they watch the TV cameras at Zava? Got to be on the internet.
Yeah, and that's something that really bothered me. And you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier. You know, maybe Next has kind of dismissed them. I don't need them anymore, but. Next has viewed them as a threat all along and tried to do things to them and their families as it executes its plan. So I don't think that it's given up on them. I mean, it could have done so many things. I mean, like when Paul was locked in his office, the code for that little keypad, that should have been child's play for Next. Could have unlocked and swung open the door. Some of that was a tough thing for me to swallow, again, on a show that's supposedly about technology. But sometimes you just have to hand wave.
Yeah, hand wave. That's exactly what Karen would have said. yes. Well, speaking of hand wave, though, I didn't notice this, but you noticed a very glaring problem with the background.
Oh, yeah. And this goes beyond hand wave. This one I can't let them off the hook for this one, and that's why I only gave them a ranking of 7 instead of anything higher. Okay, so when we start this show, we've got Mason's parents. They're in their car. They're lost on a factory site. It's late at night. It's night. It's dark. It's black. There's no light. It's not even close to daylight. He takes off and takes care of them. Ty and Ethan are at the house. It's nighttime. It's dark. Gina and Ben go to the woman's house. It's night. It's dark.
So you're saying it's night.
It's night. It's night. This is all supposed to be taking place at night. Paul and Ted on their excellent adventure. They go to Zava. The place is crawling with employees.
At night.
And it's no way should that be at night. Even if the FBI was there at night doing their thing, you wouldn't have all these employees working, getting snacks, getting breaks in the middle of the night. That's just not believable. And then when Paul walks out and goes to find a bus, it's bright daylight. But then what are the scenes after, or kind of right interspersed in there? It's Mason finding his parents still in the dark. So that one I can't hand wave. They completely mixed up night and day on this one. That was a huge faux pas.
Yeah, I think I recall that when he walked into his office / break room, that then it was day, but that's true. But they drove in at night. So it's like, you know, they kind of messed up on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that was huge. So yeah, so they definitely got a point or two down for that.
All right,
one.
Sorry guys. Yeah, messed up there. Okay. And we have our last 5-minute setups as per usual. We get Natalie, who's now the, she seems like she's like a lower level something. She's not at the same pay grade as Mason, but she is, she at least knows her stuff. And is finding out that something is inside the servers, taking up the bandwidth, using up all the connections to the other, you know, all the different machines, and learning, or not learning necessarily, but growing. That's a big issue. And I was waiting to hear the fans starting to make a louder noise. I wanted to hear that. But they didn't do that.
Budget cuts.
Hey, you just got to, it's the Foley artist. It just has to add a little sound effect there.
Yeah. So she is apparently an NSA analyst. And so I would, and on the night shift.
We're not sure exactly if she's on the night shift.
She was the only one left the day shift. She was the only one left there. They would certainly have more than that. And not only that, but if they're running the specs on this thing that they found, you would think that they would have more people there too. But
you would think.
You would think.
And then we have Paul. Yes, Paul. Oh, well, in the daytime.
Yes.
So he's got the virus. He's kind of just my life's got to take the bus. And when's the last time he did that? I got to wonder.
Yeah, so he was successful, and so you can only wonder what's next.
Oh, wait a minute. I have to, yeah. That deserves that. And then the blackouts are spreading, and that's the one we finally see, you know, exactly where all this is happening. And the you know, again, the map suggests to me that people would understand this is not, you know, this is not just a coincidence. There's something actually going on here.
And that happened pretty quickly, because at the beginning of this, and I think that shows you how quickly Next is moving here, you know, because they were only in Birmingham, or they were in Alabama, and then taking out the water in Denver. And when you looked at the map, I mean, it was huge. So they'd move very quickly in a matter of a few hours.
Especially up up in Portland, where this thing takes place.
Hey, hey.
All righty. Well, there's that was a lot of fun. A few holes to drive a truck through, but otherwise an interesting episode. And now that's what we've thought about the show. Now let's talk about some other things, like other voice assistants in the news. Barb, you found some very interesting information about voice assistants in the media.
I did indeed, and I found an article, 5 times voice assistants starred in TV shows in 2020, and I thought, well, isn't that interesting? I wonder who they're going to list. And anyway, it starts out, the widespread adoption of voice assistants and smart speakers means television shows and other parts of pop culture can discuss and use the technology without having to spend a lot of time explaining what they are and how they work. In 2020, voice assistants and smart speakers, real and otherwise, popped up repeatedly as part of TV shows. And the article says that they picked out 5 of the most notable instances, and they included the shows The Circle, which I have not heard of, no. Too Hot to Handle, haven't heard of that one, The Voice, which The Muppets, and...
Hey!
Next.
Of course. Thank you very much, guys, for noticing. Alrighty, folks, that's time for feedback now. We need to hear what you have to say.
Let's hear some listener feedback. It's always good to get more voice samples for my database.
More voice samples for her database. That's great. We have one bit of feedback here. Here it goes.
Hi, Karen and Doug. This is Barb calling in with feedback.
Oh, wait a minute.
You can't do that one.
Oh, Barb was going to leave, had left feedback, but then I asked her to do the co-hosting. So, yeah. But we covered all of that. I listened to it. We covered all of it. Yes. In the meantime, here's Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Doug and Karen, or hello, Doug and Barb, or hello, Doug and whoever, or hello, Doug and just Doug. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Next, file number 8. I just saw yesterday file number 7, and I really want to get this audio feedback out because I want to give feedback before I saw episode 9. And of course, on the 21st, we had episode 8, and now on the 22nd, we will have episode 9 and 10. And sadly, that will do it for Next. Of course, I'm very curious if they manage to make a nice closure at the end of episode 10, but we will see. First off, what is it about Ben and Gina? Ben Wilson. Is he Wilson? Last week you said, because his father is Terrence Wilson, that military guy, why does IMDb just say Ben? He should be Ben Wilson. Well, perhaps this guy has his mother's name and not his father's name. Okay, about Gina and Ben. Does Ben have a kind of crush on Gina? Is that it? And will this play a role in him coming out with the truth that he actually is a mole? So because of his connection to Gina, he cannot stand it anymore to keep that a secret. Okay, about the cold open. This father of Mason is really silly, or just a little bit of Alzheimer, trusting his GPS fully, and this thing always works, so it works now. And not looking around and being in an industrial area, although they are probably looking for a hospital. Once this guy was probably more intelligent, having a son at such a position. Or all the intelligence of his son comes from his wife. She seems to be realistic, although she's very sick. Although this Mason Wells is perhaps not that smart as his position tells us, because he is not calling 911 for his father, just runs out. And actually, that's a nitpick. How did he know where his father is? And the second thing is, of course, running out in an important analysis. But on the other hand, we need that for our plot. No nitpicks about how Ted and Paul got into Zava and how they circumvented security. I think Ted did a very nice job, in the beginning at least, talking to this special agent. Not so special, according to Paul. Pharrell. I just don't understand why Ted suddenly changed his attitude. He played his role very well. Why was it necessary that he suddenly started to call Paul? I just love how Paul LeBlanc treated his so-called hostages. That was really nice and funny. Okay, that was all for now. Getting ready to watch episode 9. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Thanks.
Hello,
so much,
Fred.
Oh, man alive. A lot of good observations that we clearly agreed with you on. The one thing I will say is that in order for our heroes back at the bunker to understand that there is a mole, Ted had to get that information somehow to Paul. And I think there was no other way to do that. And they did need that information as soon as possible. So I think that was his reasoning.
And I think the other thing that Fred brought up was that we didn't touch on was, yes, I mean, here Mason went running out of the place while something very important and critical is going on. And
it's your parents, you know.
I know it is. And that's important. And yes, and I've gone running out of work for that type of thing in the past. But still,
Yep. Well, Natalie did a good job with it. So that's always a good thing.
Mm-hmm. She did.
All righty, folks. If you've got some feedback, episodes 9 and 10, we're going to cover them next week. And so you have a little more time if you're trying to get your thoughts together. Take a look at next.ctpodcasting.com/feedback. It lists all the ways to get in touch, including and especially the Facebook group. facebook.com/groups/whatsnextpodcast just search for What's Next Podcast on Facebook, and there's a lot of conversation going on there, and that's a great place to leave your comments, and we'll get them here. Alrighty, sound good?
Sounds like a plan.
It's always a good plan to give feedback. Okay, we have now, this is where we have some fun, because this is the spoiler section. And this is for both file 9 and file number 10. It was broadcast on Tuesday, December 22nd. They gave us three episodes in 1 week, and that meant we had a really, we're going to double up on these. We're going to have one episode for both 9 and 10. Next targets Congresswoman Beatty again when Agent Shay Salazar seeks to help her stop it. Shay discovers a leak within her team as Gina encounters trouble while trying to code the virus into an NSA server. Meanwhile, Next taunts LeBlanc with a new tactic relating to his illness, and Shay and LeBlanc devise one last dangerous ploy to destroy Next and save their lives, their families, and the world. In the all-new special two-hour File Number 9, File Number 10 series finale of Next. Alrighty, but that's coming up next time. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to this wonderful show. I think it's wonderful. I hope you do, too. I'm Doug Payton. You can find me out on Twitter. I'm at Doug Payton, DougPayton.
And I'm Barb, and I'm at Tangier14 on Twitter.
We are going to see you next time for the last time.
And we will find out. What's Next?